welcome back to Extra Features Interview. Today we have a fantastic film. Is it a gothic horror? Is it a drama? Is it a murder mystery? It's got a lot of questions that I need answered tonight. A Desperate Road, we have Cam Pedersen here, the director. Welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm great. It's nice to have a fellow Canadian on the show every once in a while. It gets me all happy.
Oh, wow. You're really going the global route then with this.
I think we have to. I mean, I don't think Canadian film gets any credit in the world. I really don't.
No. Not as much as we should.
And I think this film does deserve a little bit more credit than it's been getting, I would say.
Nice. Well, thank you very much.
I enjoyed this film. I want that stated ahead of time. And it upsets me because I looked up IMDb and it says it hasn't been screened yet.
No, actually, she just did the producers did a little screening here in Winnipeg to kind of kick it off. Because it really was a community-based style film, right?
Can you explain that further?
Well, the whole project happened because of the IndyCan 10K through Abby Fettergreen. And Abby teamed up with Jen for the Manitoba region of the whole program. And Alan had a script, and Jen were kind of working together, and they were working with another director initially. And then at some point, they wanted to – I'm not sure what the reasons were, but they called me. I knew Alan from years back. We're both drummers, and we kind of knew each other through mutual people. But I really wasn't aware they were actually doing this. And so he came on, and he asked me if I would take over directing, and we did. And within about 3 weeks, we were cramming out some rewrites and changing the program so we could do a film that was within that program that we could get done in the budget and in the time constraints, because it was a pretty tight schedule. So
what was your schedule? You're saying you already had time constraints. So how long did you have to shoot it?
I actually had 10 full days and one half day.
Holy crap. You're kidding me.
Yeah. So the first thing to do, because the script, he did have a 90-page script to it. And with 10 days, it was the first thing to do is there's no dollies. There's no, there's nothing but handheld or on sticks. And the second we decided, because we had one camera too. So the second we were doing that, had a really good DP who was Steve Morrison, who now is out there in Toronto working. But, we decided right then and there, we're the kind of movie that you've already seen. We knew going in that we were going to do this kind of jump cut style. If we're going to do a thriller, let's make it handheld and gritty. Let's do that sort of almost POV style of approach. And number one, it buys us time. It also lets us spend more time on performance and a little less time wasting on, dolly rigs and stuff, right? Because that does suck time. So,
I guess my first question, what do you consider your movie? Is it a gothic horror? Is it a drama? Is it a thriller?
We really came out, I think, really kind of coming from it as a kind of a mystery thriller kind of idea, I wouldn't say horror, but definitely suspenseful for sure.
But, okay, I guess I don't really want to ruin things for people that haven't seen it, but but you know where I'm coming from, the horror aspect. I really consider it like, have you ever seen a gothic horror?
Yeah, you thought that was gothic horror?
I could have been, because I didn't know till the end.
Oh, okay.
Because, I had a fairly good idea what was going on,
mm-hmm.
but you had me convinced at times it wasn't going on.
Yeah, I think we flip you around. It happens twice, actually. I think there's two big flips, and you follow our lead character, Tom, for a while, and then it flips again, and I don't want to give it away either. But, I think for me, I was approaching it as kind of a suspenseful thriller.
Okay.
But I just wanted the lighting to be that stark and dark.
I do want to get into the lighting. Yes, I totally want. I want to discuss the one scene. You had me convinced one way when it first started. It was going one way, which is what my initial thought for the end was, and I was right.
Okay.
But you switched me in a scene when he comes, goes, "Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Hi, Glennie." I'm like, okay, then I'm wrong.
Okay, yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do, and we kind of purposely...
Yeah, that was on purpose, then?
That really was on purpose.
Okay, because it worked for me perfectly.
Yeah, yeah. The idea was to take the audience with him one direction and then kind of throw the U-turn at them, which would, I think, wasn't meant to confuse as much as it went to make you second-guess what you've already suspected.
Yeah, but the thing is, you've convinced me of this now. You totally U-turned me.
Yeah.
And I'm not like, am I thinking the wrong thing? Am I seeing here? But the thing that wouldn't let me 100% convince myself was when you're showing the two scenes at night, it's always dark.
Yeah.
When Lisa comes, okay. It's always dark.
Yeah.
So that's where let me think gothic horror. Okay, maybe we're going down this route.
Okay.
So I think you did a great job of presenting that to me. So was that your plan to have it always in dark there?
It was. The whole part of it at the beginning?
Yes.
Yes, it totally was. We even did, there was actually a color change to the actual film in the second half.
Yes.
And that was done purposefully too. And we were, so we kind of put some thought into that, and it really was, how can we ramp it up and how can we keep how can we keep you engaged was the key. Yeah.
Well, you did a fantastic job. I want to say keep me engaged.
Awesome. Well, thanks.
That's why I'm upset. When I read this film had not been screened, I'm like, what are they doing? I like this film.
Yeah, well, Jen is the producer. Jen Turner produced it. And along with Abby Fettergreen, Kyle Bernay, John Bernard, Jean Dutoit. So she's got a big team around her with it. And I know they're working on how they're going to market it now, and they're looking at festivals, and they're doing
good.
That. So,
yeah. Good. So they're not keeping it in a closet on me. That's what I was wondering.
No, not at all. This okay. Actually, I only delivered the film to Jen. It was just shortly after Christmas. So she's moved kind of quickly on it, actually.
Oh, so I must have got in on it early then somehow. I just sort of found it, stumbled on it.
Yeah, yeah. It took us a little longer. That was an interesting... you know, because we were an independent film, you know, with the budget restraints. And, of course, we did suffer some things with sound. So we had to do a complete sound redesign on the film from top to bottom. So it just took more time than we expected.
Sorry, you're suggesting a sound. Are you saying the dialogue or are you saying the background music? Yeah,
I'm saying we rebuilt sound. We completely redesigned the sound on the movie from front to back.
Oh, my God. That's a lot
of
work.
There was no sound on set.
Okay.
Because we couldn't use it. And so it was a big commitment, a big decision. And we had an amazing, like our cast, everybody came forward and said, no problem, we'll come in and ADR the whole thing. And that was the same with our post-production team. We had guys like Dale Penner who helped with ADR, and I was recording ADR in my home. And he would fix it and sync it. And then we had an audio sound designer named Bruce Little. Who I think turned it into a high impactful film with the design he did. It was incredible. We also had Talking Dog in Regina do some of the special effects tracking, and we had a good score. So, I mean, you know, it took a while to build all the pieces, but it was, in my opinion, it was so worth the wait. I mean, it was an extra wait, but it was so worth it.
I think so. I've got a couple questions about the music. The first time I hear music, it's very dark.
Yeah.
Gloomy. And then you throw in a pop song.
At the beginning?
Yeah, I'm talking, these are my notes, so I read them as I go. So I have a pop song in the background. So I don't really know where you're going, because like I said, gothic horror, pop song, you're really starting to throw wrenches at me early.
Yeah. Well, we just wanted to create that at-home feel, right?
Yeah, and the at-home feel.
But it's interesting, because that song... was written by a Winnipeg band, Sweet Alibi. And it just fit. When we heard, we had a different song in the cut, and we actually switched it out. Jen and Alan brought that song to me, and it just, the tone was great. And the reason I like that pop tune is because you do hear that same song throughout the movie in different places, and it's playing underneath the sort of score, right? So it becomes a real counterpoint kind of feel. And it's supposed to be this motif reminder for him all the time. So it has, that's why I liked it. It had the tone. It wasn't so poppy that it couldn't lead into the, you know, the suspense tone, right?
So as I'm watching the film, I have questions. What's his plan to do with all this footage? Because the guy keeps going back to the footage. So like I said, you keep implementing things in me, whereas Tom is watching footage constantly. I'm kind of like, what's, like I said, the wrenches are coming from you constantly.
Yeah. He's watching footage. You mean like the home video?
Yes, constantly. Okay. Yes. I'm like, how much home video does this guy take?
Yeah.
Like, that's the biggest iPhone I've ever seen, full of footage.
Yeah, actually, it was probably a camcorder. That was something we knew we had to take footage of the family at the home. I don't want to say where it is, hopefully, because I don't want to give that much spoiler away.
I'm trying to be very good. You're killing me. I wish this still had screens, because I could say spoilers, and then get into what I want to get into, but I can't.
Yeah. And so we had quite a bit of camcorder footage of family moments, and we just wrapped them into the scene.
Where did you find your locations? I mean, you have a scene at a hospital. I think I'm allowed to say that.
Yep.
Where did you find a hospital?
We lucked out. We had shot it at Misericordia Hospital in Winnipeg.
So they just let you go?
They did. There's a funny story to that, actually. I had, yeah, they did. They had a whole section, like a ward that I think was being closed down for repairs. But they're pretty good with film crews coming into town and stuff. Winnipeg is a little bit, I think, I don't want to say looser, but access, I think, is maybe not quite so stringent. And we came to them as an independent film, and they were kind of got behind it, too, because it's well, you've seen the film. So, I mean, a lot of it builds in the hospital moments, right?
Yes.
Yeah. But it was nice. It wasn't completely new. It was kind of suited, you know, the look suited, too. And, you know, we were in there for about 3 days.
I can believe it.
Yeah.
What's the other question? Oh, the cottage. Or is it a house?
Cottage.
I couldn't really tell. It looked like a cottage.
Yeah, it's a lake house, actually.
Okay, I wasn't sure what I was going for. Like, is it a lake house, cottage, who knows?
Yeah, it was a friend of the producers, Jen Turner's, and they have it's a beautiful house. It's out on Longbow Lake, just east of Kenora. And we took it over. They actually, I think Jen put them in a hotel or something, and we took it over. We were there for about 4 days, 5 days. And the boathouse. I mean, we did the location scout, and the second we walked into the boathouse, Alan and I both said, we're definitely putting scenes in here. I mean, it's, you know, move something, do something. But it gave us a lot of, isolation. Which was kind of key to what was going on with his character, right? I mean, it wouldn't have worked so well if we were in a neighborhood. You know what I mean?
Oh, I agree.
Like with what he was going through, it isolated him more. It separated him. It really, I think it really helped that. Where if we would have been in some neighborhood in the city, it definitely wouldn't have had the same impact.
No, I 100% agree with you that. You got to have that sense of isolation.
Yeah.
For the scene when he falls down the hill, you kind of need that isolation too. I can say these things. I'm not really ruining anything.
Yeah. No, you do. And he's, you know, because he has to be cut off, or else I think the whole premise doesn't work as well.
I have to go. I wrote, at times I was confused at what was going on. Was that definitely direction from you?
Yes.
Okay.
That was the way it was scripted too.
Okay. I'm trying not to spoil anything, so I'm trying to be as vague as I can. How was the night shooting on those scenes, by the way, especially the hill one?
It was good. We had a really good DP. But, I mean, we knew we'd only have so much, throw. We were shooting on the red camera, and, you know, we didn't want to be completely black, so we had a few big lights posted way out there.
I got to ask, twice you have characters that go into the water. Sabrina goes in first thing.
Yeah.
When were you filming this? It didn't look warm outside.
No, it was summer.
Okay, so good. So everybody had a nice, pleasant day.
Yeah, but we did the night shot where he tumbled down the hill, and he only tumbled so far because it was really, really rickety hill.
Well, it looked painful.
It was painful, but he had to hit the water, and then Sabrina, our actress, Pam Abita, had to jump in. You know, and there was a lot, they were pretty concerned. It was a little cool. And I actually got in the water first just to show them it's okay.
Well, that was nice of you.
Yeah. Well, there was some concern, too, because there was rocks and stuff. So I actually took a rope and I walked it and made sure that they wouldn't dive off the dock and hit something in there and stuff. Because the homeowners weren't with us at that time. And so we just wanted to make sure. And it was okay. But it was a little nippy. Like, they were shivering. Lyle, our lead actor, he was... by the time we were done the take, he was holding as best he could, but after, you know, he started to see his body shake. So, okay, I think we got it. We got to move on.
So how did you find her actors? Did you revolve in the casting process, or no, it sounds like you got here so late?
No, we did. We did a casting. We had a casting session. Lyle came in. He was kind of an earlier choice.
He has to be your first choice, I think, to work around him.
It was kind of between two actors, actually, at the time. And I know when we had the casting, we found Kaylee, who was remarkable as the little girl, and her hair color. And then Crystal Snow walked in, and she just blew us away. She absolutely did an amazing audition. And it was her look. And suddenly we're sitting there with the casting director, Shelley Anthus, and I'm just grabbing these photos together and going, that's a family. That's a family right there. And once we had them, we found Susan Kelso, who played them, her mom. And, you know, the looks kind of all went together. And then Lyle, when I finally chose Lyle, I don't know, he was a guy that could hold the film by himself. That's kind of what I was hoping to get out of him. Because it wasn't easy. You know, I mean, you're kind of telling an actor all the time in this movie to kind of, not deadpan it, but you can't get overly emotional at some point. And for an actor to go that long and do that and kind of still maintain, you know, keep you engaged and still be in there, it's not easy to do. I think there's a real trust he had in me to, you know, I think at some point he just wanted to put a bit more in. But it's like, we got to save it to the end. You got to save it to the end.
He did a great job. I think you did exactly what you were supposed to do.
Yeah. Oh, great.
So I'm going to have to go into some slight spoilers because I have a few more questions and they're going to be very specific scenes.
Okay.
So if you say, no, I'm not discussing it, it's okay. When a certain person is supposed to be doing her job.
What's that?
And when a certain person is supposed to be doing their job, I'll try to be as vague as I can. How did they not get fired?
How do they not get fired?
You know exactly who I'm talking about?
No.
Okay, we're in the hospital and certain person escapes.
Oh.
I was like, how is this person not fired?
Okay. That's a spoiler, yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm trying to be vague for you.
Yeah. I don't know. I knew, without giving the spoiler away, I knew I wanted her back.
Oh, okay, I was wondering that. I'm like, because she comes back.
Yeah. Don't give that away.
Giving it away. I'm trying to be very vague.
Easy, Simon. Yeah, no, I really wanted to get her back in. I think that was effective the second time around. I think
it was.
Yes, and I don't think you expected it the second time.
No, I did not.
So that's always a good thing too, yeah.
Okay, I figured it was her union. Said, nope, she's allowed to work. I totally took it as a union thing.
No, I think I totally had creative license on that one.
Okay.
So we're going for the shock value.
At the end of the film, you show us a scene which I really, really, really needed. It explained a lot to me, the very end scene of the film.
Okay.
And I can't spoil this because it's the spoiler for the whole movie.
Yeah, the whole reveal sequence?
Yes, we'll call it the reveal sequence. I had to have that. I think it played out well. It made sense to me. And
yeah,
I was happy coming out of that.
Yeah, I've had several reactions to that, actually, when I first showed them the initial cut. I think it was because it kind of hammers at you and doesn't let you go. I think for the last 15 minutes of the film, it's kind of full on. And their first reaction, I think, was a little bit, okay. And then watched it a little bit while later and suddenly went, okay. You know? It just felt for me, I think at some point in the end of the movie, it has to grab you. And then Alan had that in the script. I mean, he had the reveal written. And, you know, so we just ramped it up kind of with the editing a bit more. But we knew we were going to be doing that. I mean, we had to, you know, we shot everything. We tried to cover things without giving any spoilers away, you know, with actors there and not there for our next take, right?
Things like
that. And so I had a few pieces that I could do that with. And, you know, it was just how I was going to assemble it was kind of the question.
Well, that's what That's what I wanted to get into, assembling that shot. That could not have been an easy shot to assemble.
No, the whole sequence, I think, went through about three or four different versions of it. We had a middle sequence that did the same thing. I know Alan came in at one point. I just kind of brought him in with me, so it was, you know, both of our eyes on it. Because I think at that point, you know, him being the writer and me the director and editing, we were kind of, you know, sort of the ones responsible to make the story work that we had on the page at that point. And he came in kind of with a second pair of eyes, and we batted ideas around and finally got the sequences to work the way we thought we would. And luckily, you know, for us, you know, Jen and the producers were kind of okay with it, so.
Because, I mean, I don't know. I do have one thing. I did find Lisa's dad to be a bit more of a dick than I thought he should be.
Okay.
But, I mean, that's just personal choice. I just thought he could have been a little bit nicer.
Poor Tom.
Yeah.
He comes through at the, it kind of made sense to me, actually, because I was, you know, I'm a dad, I'm a father, and, you know, for people who haven't seen the movie yet. But, I mean, it made sense that he was upset at Tom.
Yes.
Like, you know, it made sense to me that he was upset with him.
But we don't know why until the end, and that's what I mean. I'm discussing early on, I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah.
Again.
No, that means I succeeded.
You did succeed. I told you that off the top. I'm giving you full credit for succeeding. That's why I almost took it as a gothic movie.
Okay.
Like, if you changed Lisa's dress a bit more and made it a little more, if you had more time, I think you totally could have turned this into a gothic movie.
Oh, really? Suspended her in wires? And
I think it would have worked.
And blew her hair out.
Oh, I think blowing her, I don't think if you need the wires. I think if you just blew her hair, I think it totally would have worked. Because you have a hospital, you have an isolated place, you have two heroines.
You have a dark intersection, you don't know what's going on.
Right. I mean, I think it's all here. Maybe Alan was really thinking about this and just didn't have the money to do it.
I think we did maybe go the horror route when we had Lisa, without giving any more spoilers away. But you know the scene I'm talking about, right, where she pops into the scene.
Yes, that's when I started clicking in.
And people jumped when that one happened. I saw some people kind of bounce in their seat a bit.
Well, you have to.
Yeah. And there's Bruce Little again, right? I mean, his sound design was, you know.
Oh, Bruce Little is awesome. I'm quite impressed.
He didn't pull any punches. You know, the sound really hits you, too.
But Sabrina, we haven't really talked about her much because she's only really in the beginning and she shows up later.
Yeah.
Did she have more to do at any other time and get cut, or is that just her role is just to show up?
There was sort of a storyline that we were playing with to sort of tie her more in. But, you know, it came down to, I think we just realized we have to put more time on it than we wanted to do with the movie to make it work. It was just one of those things where we thought if we had her husband involved too, but it just felt a little convoluted. I know Alan and I were going back and forth with it quite a bit. Pam Avita, kind of the actor too. I mean, you know, she was working with us, kind of helping to backstory that. And the more we got into it, the more we just thought it's just taken away from the through line of the movie. So, yeah.
Can you discuss the grant at all or no?
Okay, sorry?
The grant?
The grant?
Yeah. Didn't you? Okay, the way the producer explained it to me, each province had their own film?
Yeah. Abby's program. Yeah. He had it set up. I think he's still doing the IndyCan 10K. Maybe it's called the 20K now. I'm not sure. But it is sort of by region, and each province had a team. Here in Manitoba, he started it with he was working with Farpoint Films, which is John Bernard and Kyle Bernay. And they had Alan and Jen teamed up, and they submitted the script. And there was a number of scripts. I couldn't tell you how many. I know that John came back and told – or Kyle came back and told me that this was the one that they picked, and that's kind of how it happened. And I assume that's the process that went through in all the provinces. And then they get – when they're done, I they can submit them to any festivals they want. And pretty much they have, you know, the film. And then I think distribution ends up with Abby at some point with his company. I'm not real sure about that. I never really asked, but
it's all good.
That's good. Yeah, no, they brought me in to direct, and I thought that's a big enough job. I don't need to be dealing with it. I produce and everything else I do in my world, but mostly I'm screenwriting, but I didn't get involved with the producers too much on that one.
Have you seen any of the other films?
I have not, actually. Yeah. Okay. And I'm not even sure where they screen.
Okay. I don't know. It's one of my goals to find the other ones now.
I was just going to ask you, have you seen any of them?
No, you're the first I've ever heard of this. So I was fascinated by this program. That's why I wanted to talk to you.
Oh, wow.
Because I've never heard of this. I'm like, I'm a Canadian podcaster. Wouldn't they get in contact with me? Because I'm willing to do them all.
Yeah.
Being Canadian, I'm more than happy to do any Canadian film that sends me. I don't care if I hate it. It's the worst thing I've ever seen. I will still do it to promote Canadians.
And are you Toronto?
I'm just outside of Toronto, but yes.
Yeah, then you should definitely be finding that out. Because I know Abby's company is all based out of there.
Oh, okay. Well, like I said, I just scroll Twitter and people find me all the time and stuff like that. So I wish I could ask you more questions, but I'm not allowed to because they're all spoiler related. So is there anything I didn't ask you want to discuss? I think I'm pretty thorough.
No, I don't know. I think we're really lucky on this movie. You know, a lot of if we're talking about doing an independent film like this with the budget we had, you know, number one, you know, we lucked out and we had a good cast that came in on board with us. We also had a great crew. And I say that in the way that, you know, we got Steve Morrison and with him as a DP, you know, his caliber of DP attracts people that want to work with him. And, you know, we ended up with Trevor Christensen, a guy that I've known to be an actor, but he was also gaffing, and he did an amazing job. And Pascal Bouvet, who came in as a focus puller, I've never seen a focus puller work that fast. You know, that would allow me to do things with as little rehearsal as I was doing in order to get the day done. So a lot of the things happened that let the production side of it work, and that team definitely was why it was happening. And on the post-production side, we got really lucky too. You know, we had White Ink kind of contributed the edit suite. We were in there longer than anticipated. And Tony Whiteink, who's a good friend of mine as well, but he colored the thing. We went through coloring twice, and he wasn't, you know, like everyone just went that extra distance. Bruce Little's in the same house, and the same thing with him, and Dale Penner, and Brent Marginette. Like, all these guys came in to keep this movie afloat at the post-production side. And overall, I think we were just really lucky that the community here in Winnipeg kind of kept the film going, to be honest.
Well, like I've said before, it's a great film. It needs to be seen. So make sure people see this film.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure Jen's working pretty hard. The beautiful thing about deciding to redo the complete sound is that she's got a film with a complete M&E track, so she can sell this film anywhere in the world.
That's awesome. I wish I could tell people where to find this film, but maybe VOD eventually?
Yes, I would definitely suspect so. I think you should check in. I think you should get Jen on your show. And you should do a podcast with Jen Turner.
I don't know why I'd even ask Jen Turner. She should have showed up tonight if she wanted to be on it.
Yeah.
Because she told me I had to talk to you.
Oh, well, she probably thought maybe we were just talking tech and directing.
I'm probably the worst tech person on the planet.
Okay.
Because all I do is watch films. I've never made a film. I've never acted in a film.
Yeah.
I just watch them.
Well, I think you should absolutely reach back and get her on. I think she's got some, you know, for your listeners and people doing independent film, I think she learned a lot through this process. And especially where she's pitching the film and what her plan is to market it.
Okay. Yeah. We'll see what happens in the future. Well, thank you for your time.
No problem.
And I hope you do great things in the future.
Yeah. Well, it's getting busy. So.
That's awesome. Have a great night.
You too. Thanks, man.
Bye. Oh, sorry. So welcome back. Your favorite film?
My favorite film? Oh, my God. Can I have two?
You can have eight.
Okay. Well, definitely Alien. anything with Ridley Scott almost.
Okay. Or anything, a good year counts then?
The good year? Yeah, I didn't mind a good year, actually. Okay.
All the money in the world? I'll start throwing them out here.
Yeah. Citizen Kane. I like thrillers. I actually grew up on thrillers, and I started writing a lot of thrillers. And directing kind of came way later. Like when I was 40, I didn't even decide to even start to try to get into that. So that's kind of the films, and anything with a James Bond movie. I know film people don't necessarily like that, but I don't know. They look like art films to me in the 60s. So.
Okay. Question number two.
Question two.
It's Friday night. People are over. What film do you put on for fun?
The Changeling, the original Changeling, with George C. Scott, filmed in Vancouver.
Oh, there you go. Something different. I like that.
That's a scary movie.
Okay, I'm at your house. I'm staring at your DVD shelf or Blu-ray. What movie would stand out that shouldn't be there?
Probably the Pixar Incredibles.
No, that's a great film. I will not give you that one at all.
Okay, Bing Crosby, Bob Hope, Road Picture.
Okay, Roger Morocco.
Love the Road Picture.
Those are great films. Okay, you've got to have something terrible on that shelf.
Charlie Chaplin. No. Something terrible.
Charlie Chaplin. Oh my God, we're going all you can. So you're like just like a film snob. Do you have Tarkovsky?
Yeah, Buster Keaton. I read those guys' biographies. Anything that directed by Lewis Gilbert, who just died recently.
So you're going to have Safety Last up there. You're going to have, so you're going to have The General. I'm totally with you.
Yeah, got The General. Got the Laurel and Hardy set thing.
Oh, wow.
All directed by Leo McCarthy or something.
Yes, I know exactly what you're happening.
Got the R Gang series. Yeah.
Oh, my God. You're like hardcore.
Yeah, I used to be. I don't know if I do it so much anymore, but. But yeah, what do I have on the DVD shelf that
so there's nothing there.
Very first short film, Trashes, which was horrible.
Now, see, but that would be an Indian. I'd let that go.
Yeah.
Like, I would come in, and if I saw, I don't know, like, Pokemon Blue on your shelf, I'd be like, why is Pokemon Blue on your shelf?
Yeah. The Sex and the City box set.
That's you say that mine. To your wife. You're like, that's not mine. That's the thing.
That should not be on the shelf.
So, I'll give you another question. I'll give you one more just to be nice.
Okay.
You go to the movie theater, what do you buy?
I used to buy popcorn, but I'm told I shouldn't be eating that much cholesterol butter. M&M's, chocolate M&M's.
There you go. Well, thank you for coming back for fun questions. I apologize if I forgot these first time. That's very bad of me.
No worries.
Good luck in your show.
Thank you.
Bye. Hey, thank you for listening. Could you please give us an iTunes review? And also, if you'd like to donate, please do so at our homepage.